This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome to Africa News Tonight. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jackson Bunganyi, and here is what is coming up.
That is an established playbook of theirs, and I think they will attack wherever they see an opportunity because their credibility has been severely damaged.
That was David DeRoche, associate professor at the U.S. Defense University, on the possibility of Iranian and Hezbollah terror attacks as conflict in the region continues to increase. Also, a new U.S. report has revealed worrying trends of trafficking women in Lesotho. And last night's debate between vice presidential candidates offered a change in tone. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Iran's missile attack on Israel has heightened tensions across the Middle East, with some regional analysts predicting a powerful Israel response. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps said it carried out the attack in retaliation for the Israeli killings of three key figures: Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah, Hamas political leader Ismail Haniyeh, and an Iranian commander. Involving nearly 200 ballistic missiles, this was Iran's second and largest direct attack on Israel from its own territory. In yesterday's attack, Israeli defense systems supported by U.S. forces intercepted most of the missiles, preventing significant damage. However, at least one person was killed and several were injured yesterday. The strike comes ahead of the anniversary of the Hamas militant attack on Israel on October 7th last year, which sparked a war in which more than 40,000 Palestinians in Gaza have died. For the latest on the Middle East conflict, I have VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb on the line. Carla, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
What is the latest that is known about Iran's missile attack on Israel?
Well, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has condemned this attack. He called it an outrageous act of aggression. As you mentioned, there were about 200 ballistic missiles that headed toward Israel in that attack. The difference between this attack and the previous direct attack that Iran had launched on Israel back in April is that this was about twice as large as that attack in terms of ballistic missiles. Now, that other attack did have, you know, dozens of drones. It also had cruise missiles. It had about 100 ballistic missiles. But ballistic missiles, those are the things to hone in on, because those are much more difficult to intercept. They're faster, and it's just a much more serious threat than sending in a drone. Mm-hmm. Israel took the bulk of shooting down these missiles, but we do know that two U.S. destroyers, USS Cole and USS Bulkley, fired about a dozen interceptors against those incoming Iranian ballistic missiles during the attack.
And what has the U.S. government been saying about the Iranian action and the potential Israeli response?
Well, of course, they say U.S. officials have said that they are going to continue to consult closely with Israel on their next steps following the attack. This is a very serious situation right now. The U.S. has, ever since October 7th, been trying to prevent the Middle East from becoming a tinderbox and turning into a greater regional conflict. And for months, it's built up, and then it's calmed down, and then it's built up, and then it's calmed down. But of course, right now, in this exact moment, between Iran launching missiles, there's an incursion in Lebanon, there's still a situation in Gaza, it is really getting tense. And so the U.S. has called for a ceasefire in Gaza. The U.S. is calling for a ceasefire with the situation in Lebanon, had called for to calm things down. And they are now calling on Iran to stop these actions, because they have said directly that if there are attacks on U.S. service members or further attacks on Israel, that the U.S. will not hesitate to defend U.S. forces or their allies.
And the U.S. military has a number of assets in the region, including an aircraft carrier strike group and fighter jets. What is their role in the situation?
Well, right now, I did ask that question just to Pentagon Press Secretary Major General Pat Ryder yesterday, and he did confirm that it was only the two U.S. destroyers that were participating in defending against this attack on Tuesday. However, the U.S., out of abundance of caution and to protect their forces and to have a ready force to defend Israel if need be, they sent three additional aircraft squadrons. We're talking F-15s, F-16s, and A-10s. They arrived in the region. That's all in all about a few thousand additional forces. These are not ground troops. Again, this is a focus on air power. And then, as you mentioned, yes, the USS Abraham Lincoln Carrier Strike Group has been told to remain in the region, as well as the Marine Expeditionary Unit, USS Wasp. They are also staying there because should this turn into a greater regional conflict and should U.S. citizens need to be evacuated, those Marines, they would be the ones likely turned to help evacuate U.S. citizens.
Thanks for that update, Carla. That was Carla Babb, VOA's Pentagon correspondent. Thanks, Carla.
You're welcome.
As you heard, tensions have risen sharply in the Middle East, with Israel vowing to retaliate after Iran's missile attack yesterday. David DeRoche, associate professor at the U.S. Defense University, discussed the possible impact on the region with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi, which could include shipping of goods to North Africa and security of the Horn of Africa.
It will have an effect on the region. It depends upon how much damage was actually inflicted. If this was an attack like the April 14th attack, which was mostly intercepted, there will be limited impact. But if they actually caused real damage, if they managed to actually penetrate Israeli defenses and hit targets that are important, Israel will respond. And they will respond in a manner that I think will damage Iran profoundly, probably starting by taking out their air defenses and then moving onward to include Iranian Navy shipping, which is the primary means Iran has to both earn money and to project power outside of its borders. In terms of North Africa, it's hard to see what can be done that's worse than what Iran has already done through the Houthis, which is effectively stop most legitimate commerce through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. So I think the impact of this will be marginal, unless, of course, it leads to a total defeat of Iran and results in Iran not having an ability to resupply the Houthis with anti-ship missiles. In that instance, it's possible that maritime commerce to North Africa can pick up.
How could a potential Israeli counterattack on Yemen or even Iran impact the security of the Horn of Africa?
You know, Israel has already conducted an attack on Yemen, and I think that the dynamic there is different than the dynamic in the Israeli-Iranian security calculus. Basically, when it comes to Yemen, I think Israel's attitude is, if you don't mess with us, we won't mess with you. It's being left to the United States and its partners to try to restore security for maritime shipping in the Red Sea. And so far, that's been a failure. If the attacks escalate between Israel and Iran, if there's an exchange back and forth again, the Horn of Africa might see some marginal peripheral impacts. But for the most part, with Bab el-Mandeb already closed to most shipping, I think the impact will be marginal. There may be an increase in oil prices and in petroleum and fertilizer feedstock prices if Israel chooses to retaliate by striking Iranian refineries, which are the source of most of the Iranian regime's hard currency.
As military threats are on the rise, are there also expectations for a spike in terrorist attacks as affiliates inside Africa could launch?
There are. When Iran and Lebanese Hezbollah say that they'll respond in a manner in a place of their choosing, what that means is that they probably will not take an overt military action, although Iran has done so here, but rather that they will attack what they see as Israeli or Jewish interests, which they regard as the same as Israeli, someplace else. So in the past, we've seen aircraft targeted in Kenya, civilian aircraft targeted in Kenya. We've seen attacks against embassies and consulates. We've seen attacks in Europe against tour groups on buses. And of course, most notably, we've seen the Hezbollah and IRGC destruction of the Jewish community center in Buenos Aires, Argentina. So that is an established playbook of theirs. And I think they will attack wherever they see an opportunity because their credibility has been severely damaged.
That was David DeRoche, associate professor at the U.S. Defense University, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawy. As you heard, the world is watching to see how Israel responds to the Iranian missile attack. VOA's Caro Van Dam spoke with Daniel Rubenstein, with a group called Israeli Citizens Spokespersons, a U.S. group that advocates for Israeli and Jews. He said that while he hopes the conflict in the Middle East ends peacefully, Israel has a right to defend itself. He also said Israel has limited aims in its fight with the Hezbollah organization in Lebanon.
Israel has a very simple goal in this war, and I think it's a quite modest one. And it's simply that these 60,000 Israelis who have been forced to flee their homes, these Israelis who live on the border with Lebanon, they have the right to go home safely. The Israeli military wants to ensure that the Israeli people can go home safely. Right now, they can't go home safely because Hezbollah is sitting a few football fields away with guided anti-tank missiles pointed at them.
That was Daniel Rubenstein with the group called Israel Citizen Spokespersons, which is aligned with the Israel government. He spoke yesterday with my colleague, Caro Van Dam. A report by the United States Department of State Office that monitors and combats trafficking in persons has revealed worrying trends of trafficking women in Lesotho. The office's 2024 Trafficking Persons report says vulnerable women in the country are lured to South Africa through fake job advertisements on social media. On arrival in South Africa, they are detained in prison-like conditions and placed into forced labor, including sex work. Tuzo Kumalo visited Maseru, Lesotho, to find out why Basotho women are falling into these trafficking rings.
A year ago, Bokang Musweu was lured to the Lesotho capital, Maseru, where she was promised a job. It turned out the job was non-existent, forcing her to turn to prostitution to survive. In August, a client hired Musweu from her usual night spot in the city. On reaching the client's place, she was locked in a room, beaten and raped.
He didn't use protection. It's a rape because I didn't agree on unprotected sex. And then after that, he slept. Then I escaped from the place. Called the cab, went to the police. He was given a bail.
The mother of one says she was pushed into sex work by unemployment and hunger. She says many of her fellow sex workers have been trafficked to South Africa where they are forced into sex work.
That person who promised the work can gather the gents. Yeah, they buy, but I am not getting the money. Yeah, the money goes to that person. While I moved from here to one client and returning.
Non-governmental organizations working with women say many desperate for jobs are lured by false advertisements and then forced into sex work in South Africa. Lerato Nketse is the executive director at the Migrant Workers Association of Lesotho.
All those sorts of inhuman treatment that you can think about, because they first track them to stay there. Then they will encounter multiple sex with multiple partners that they don't even, they're the clients of whoever.
Lerato Mako, who has turned to street vending to put food on the table, says many women don't want to sell goods on the streets and end up falling prey to traffickers.
Here in the street vendors, it's very tough. We are so many, we compete, we sell one thing, even if we can come with different thing, they are going to copy you and sell what we are selling. So there's no life here.
The U.S. Department of State is urging authorities in Lesotho to provide more funding for the victims of trafficking, as well as increasing investigations and prosecutions on human trafficking crimes. The Lesotho government has increased awareness campaigns, established trafficking protection committees, and set up an office to investigate cybercrimes, including trafficking. It is also working with South Africa to fight trafficking. After South African police freed 7 trafficked women near Johannesburg in April, the Gauteng head of Serious Organized Crimes Investigations, General Ibrahim Kadwa, acknowledged that trafficking is a problem. In February, law enforcement agencies freed 8 trafficked Lesotho women held at a house in Katlehong, Ekurhuleni. Kadwa said, as proof of how seriously the government takes human trafficking crimes, last year one trafficker was sentenced to 309 years in prison, while another was imprisoned for 61 years. He said there are now comprehensive laws to help strengthen enforcement. For VOA News, I am Thuso Khumalo in Maseru, Lesotho.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. The 2 vice presidential candidates in the U.S. election faced off last night in a debate hosted by CBS News. Many political analysts and voters noted the event in New York City between Republican Ohio Senator J.D. Vance and Democratic Minnesota Governor Tim Walz was unlike recent presidential debates and American politics in general. It was polite. Right after the debate, viewers Carol Van Dam and Douglas Mpuga hosted a live analysis. J. Peter Pham, a distinguished fellow with the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council and former U.S. ambassador to the Sahel region, said what stood out most to him was the commonality between Vance and Walz on a number of positions.
Several times we heard Governor Walz, and we also heard Senator Vance say, they agreed with each other or entertained for us. That to me is a promising start. But we certainly had very clear contrast. I think right out of the starting gate, you know, in the very first question posed, we had Tim Walz struggle a bit getting Iran and Israel fumbling that.
Vance is the running mate of former President Donald Trump. Vice President Kamala Harris is at the top of the ticket for the Democratic Party. Yetunde Omede, professor of global affairs at Farmingdale College, a state university in New York, agreed with Pham on the civility of the debate, but she said she thought Walz did a better job of relaying important details on policy questions.
I think there was a level of civility that I think the American people was happy to see tonight, where both candidates could go back and forth on critical issues, but do it in a respectful manner. I think that was one of the key things that we can take away just in terms of both candidates and also in terms of Vance. But at the same time, I also think that they were able to communicate. I think on Walz had more details. He was able to communicate real critical issues when it came to health care, when it came to immigration, to the American people. And I think that was where the substance was.
Ambassador Pham said Walz dodged a question about why he misrepresented the truth about being in China when the Tiananmen Square massacre happened on July 4th, 1989.
It's been exposed in the last 48 hours that he didn't make it to China till several months later, despite having not only told this tall tale over the years, but testified in Congress in 2009 and 2014 about being there at the time, and he dodged that. So I'm not sure about the substance part of that, but I would agree on the overall civility, which I think is important for the world to see.
On the contentious issue of border security, Omede said she thinks Walz presented a more realistic framework for immigration reform than Vance did.
What Walz was able to do was, in those rebuttals, also provide policy frameworks of how they were going to handle this going forward. So I think Walz, to me, was a stronger candidate when it came to the immigration policy area. And also by, you know, it didn't really help that Vance made these rhetorics around Haitian immigrants, right? So he had to be on defense.
Vance and former President Trump have falsely claimed Haitian immigrants were eating people's pets in the town of Springfield, Ohio. The event hosted by CBS News was the final debate before the U.S. presidential election on November the 5th. You can find more VOA election coverage on voaafrica.com, voanews.com, and on Facebook and Instagram. And the week of the election, tune in for the special VOA Africa radio coverage. Prior to Kamala Harris entering the presidential race, polling showed almost half of all voters were not happy with both President Biden and former President Trump. Last April, we spoke with one member of the African diaspora community who was also considering if he would bother to vote. VOA's Jeff Swicord recently visited him again to see if the Kamala Harris candidacy has caused him to rethink his decision.
Tears are coming, which means he's growing.
Tama Bahati and his wife Antoinette are immersed in the joys of parenting with their first child.
Yeah, he's eating too much. He's growing fat.
Bahati came to the United States from the Democratic Republic of Congo on a student visa in 2001 to attend Chicago's Catholic Theological Seminary. In the DRC, he never had the opportunity to vote.
I knew of the struggle of the Congolese people to vote. Then there was opposition, but very little opposition. The crackdown on any dissent was, you know, the norm.
You want milk? I say, brrr.
At school, he was fascinated with the U.S. political system.
It was so good to know that I can talk about the president, I can talk about the governor, and I go to sleep and no one will knock at my door.
He became a U.S. citizen in 2017, but still enjoys some of the comforts of Africa when he can.
When I finished my interview for citizenship, I was given the opportunity to sign up to vote. And that was actually surreal to me.
He voted in the 2018 presidential election. When he was leaving the polling center, he got another surprise.
This is an election judge training manual. It was at the door. Would you like to sign up to become an election judge? I said, really? Me? I can be part of this?
These are the procedures.
The next election, that was a local election. I was an election judge.
Bahati works as a policy analyst at the Africa Faith and Justice Network, doing advocacy work for U.S. policy in Africa. When we first talked to Bahati last April, he was unhappy with both President Biden and former President Trump and was considering not voting. He's critical of former President Donald Trump's opposition to the Affordable Care Act, which provides health care to over 45 million Americans.
I would ask, how do you want the American people really to enjoy life when, if they get sick, they can just go bankrupt and be homeless?
He says President Biden's unwavering support for Israel and the Gaza war is conflicted.
It's out of question. Either you are for peace or you are for war. You cannot do both at once.
Now, with President Biden's exit from the race and the introduction of Vice President Harris, he is reconsidering voting.
With Kamala Harris, so there is an open mind that I'm willing to utilize here to see what is to come.
He says what must come from Harris is a stronger acknowledgement of the Palestinian struggle. He is unhappy that a Palestinian advocate was not allowed to speak at the Democratic National Convention.
Those two communities need to live together. End of story. That's where we are going. That is the vision of the new politics. So the Democrats, they need to give also the platform to those who represent our opinion on this issue.
For now, Bahati says his vote is a secret because there is still time and the political landscape continues to shift. But like his young son, his interest in voting continues to grow.
Very good.
Jeff Swicord, VOA News, Hyattsville, Maryland.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mark Bell Yabaro, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.